Hello, it is time to read from the Sioux City Journal for today, Saturday, June 26, 2021. My name is John Reef, and I'll be bringing you the news today. Here's a look at what I'll be reading. We'll start with the news and the mini editorial. Next, I'll move to the front page and then into the inside pages for more stories of local interest. At the 20-minute mark, we'll do the opinion page and any letters to the editor. At the 30-minute mark, the obituaries, followed by sports and more feature stories as time allows, wrapping up with Dear Abby. Forecast for today looking like cooler temperatures, a couple of thunderstorms and a high of 74 degrees. Winds north-northwest at 8 to 16 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy skies, a low of 59. Winds north-northwest at 4 to 8. On Sunday, tomorrow, a thunderstorm in spots in the afternoon. A high of 80 degrees. Winds northwest 4 to 8 miles an hour. Still some possible thunderstorms Sunday night, low of 59, and a thunderstorm around in the afternoon on Monday. And a high of 80 degrees. Winds out of the south 3 to 6 miles per hour. Monday night's low of 60 degrees and humid, maybe a shower in the afternoon on Tuesday, a high up to 80 degrees, winds west-northwest at 4 to 8 miles per hour. Tuesday night's low of 61 degrees and partly sunny, still humid on Wednesday, a high of 83 degrees. The mini editorial today is from Pam Adams of Sioux Center, and Pam writes, Leonard Pitts was correct again when he assessed in his opinion piece, allow teachers to teach the truth about race. What will happen without critical race theory? We should stick with the facts about racial intolerance that was and is a part of our very nation. Thank you, Mr. Pitts, for showing us our sins so that we can repent of them. Again, that from Pam Adams of Sioux Center. Top story on the front page, Chauvin gets more than 20 years, Stateline Minneapolis. Former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin was sentenced to 22 and a half years in prison for the murder of George Floyd, whose dying gasps under Chauvin's knee led to the biggest outcry against racial injustice in the U.S. in generations. The punishment, which came after Chauvin broke his year-long silence to offer condolences to the Floyd family and express hope that they eventually have some peace of mind, is one of the longest prison terms ever imposed on a U.S. police officer in the killing of a black person. Still, Floyd family members and others were disappointed. The sentence fell short of the 30 years prosecutors had requested. And with good behavior, Chauvin, 45 years old, could get out on parole after serving two-thirds of his sentence, or about 15 years. Quoting here, just because it's the most time doesn't mean it's enough time, said Nakima Levy Armstrong, a Minneapolis protest leader. In imposing the punishment, Judge Peter Cahill went beyond the 12-and-a-half-year sentence prescribed under state guidelines, citing, quote, your abuse of a position of trust and authority and also the particular cruelty, end quote, shown to Floyd. Floyd family attorney Ben Crump said the family had gotten some measure of accountability, but is hoping Chauvin gets the maximum at his upcoming federal civil rights trial. Crump said this is the longest sentence a police officer has ever received in Minnesota. But he added, quote, real justice in America will be black men and black women and people of color who will not have to fear being killed by the police just because the color of their skin. That would be real justice. Outside the courthouse, a crowd of about 50 people clasped hands or placed them on each other's shoulders. The reaction was subdued as people debated whether the sentence was long enough. Some cursed in disgust. At George Floyd Square, as the intersection where Floyd was pinned to the pavement is now known, members of the crowd broke into applause and several said, we'll take it. Chauvin was immediately led back to prison. He showed little emotion when the judge pronounced the sentence. His eyes moved rapidly around the courtroom, his COVID-19 mask obscuring much of his face. The fired white officer was convicted in April of second-degree unintentional murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter for pressing his knee against Floyd's neck for up to 9.5 minutes as the 46-year-old man gasped that he couldn't breathe and went limp on May 25, 2020. Bystander video of Floyd's arrest on suspicion of passing a counterfeit $20 bill at a corner store prompted protests around the world and led to scattered violence in Minneapolis and beyond, as well as demands for overhauling police departments and the disciplining of officers. On Friday, Chauvin, who did not testify at his trial, removed his mask and turned toward the Floyd family, speaking only briefly because of what he called, quote, some additional legal matters at hand, end quote, an apparent reference to the federal civil rights trial where his words could be used against him. Quote, I do want to give my condolences to the Floyd family. There's going to be some other information in the future that would be of interest, and I hope things will give you some peace of mind, end quote, he said without further explanation. Defense attorney Eric Nelson had asked that Chauvin be let off on probation, saying the former officer's, quote, brain is littered with what-ifs, end quote, from that day. Quoting again, what if I did not agree to join in that day? What if things had gone differently? What if I never responded to that call? What if, what if, what if, end quote. Chauvin's mother, Carolyn Paulenti, pleaded for mercy for her son, saying his reputation has been unfairly reduced to that of, quote, an aggressive, heartless, and uncaring person, quote, and a racist. I want this court to know that none of these things are true and that my son is a good man, she told the judge, adding, Derek, I want you to know I have always believed in your innocence, and I will never waver from that. I will be here for you when you come home, she said. Prosecutor Matthew Frank, in asking the judge to exceed the sentencing guidelines, said, tortured is the right word for what the officer did to Floyd. Quote, this is not a monumentary gunshot punch to the face. This is 9.5 minutes of cruelty to a man who was helpless and just begging for his life, Frank said. Floyd family members had tearfully asked the judge to impose the maximum, which was 40 years. Afterward, Floyd's nephew, Brandon Williams, said the sentence was insufficient. Quote, when you think about George being murdered in cold blood with a knee on his neck for 9 minutes and 29 seconds execution style in broad daylight, end quote. LaTanya Floyd, George Floyd's sister, said of the punishment, quote, that's nothing, that's nothing. He should have got the max, period, end quote. The concrete barricades, razor wire, and National Guard patrols at the courthouse during Chauvin's 3-week trial in the spring were gone Friday, reflecting an easing of tensions since the verdict. Before the sentencing, the judge denied Chauvin's request for a new trial. The defense had argued that the intense publicity tainted the jury pool and the trial should have been moved out of Minneapolis. The judge also rejected a defense request for a hearing into possible juror misconduct. Nelson had accused a juror of not being candid during jury selection because he didn't mention his participation in a march last summer to honor the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. Prosecutors countered the juror had been open about his views. Philip Stinson, a criminal justice professor at Bowling Green State University, said 11 non-federal law officers, including Chauvin, have been convicted of murder for on-duty deaths since 2005. The penalties for 9 who were sentenced before Chauvin range from 6 years, 9 months, to life behind bars, with the median being 15 years. In an inset picture on page A5, it shows Jennifer Starr Dodd and other supporters reacting to the sentencing of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin for the murder of George Floyd on Friday at George Floyd Square, where Floyd was killed in Minneapolis. Chauvin was sentenced to 22 and a half years in prison. Going back to the front page, giving the gift of life, Sioux City girl donates kidney to her father. This by Mason Doctor and Dateline Sioux City. After he turned 18, Phil Hafes learned he only had one working kidney. During a long-ago physical exam for a job, the young man's blood pressure was found to be quite high, and it was determined his kidneys were at fault. The kidneys regulate the blood pressure, among many other important duties. When he was 19, Hafes' doctors performed a procedure on his undeveloped, non-functioning kidney, and his blood pressure went back to normal. And for decades, he enjoyed essentially good health despite having only one kidney doing the job of two. I never had an issue with anything, said Hafes, now 63, who lives in Sioux City. I never could tell the difference. To me, I was just fine. But by the time Hafes reached age 60, that tired lone kidney began to falter. Things went downhill after a femoral artery bypass that didn't go well. His kidney shut down, and after the surgery, he went on dialysis. But then we got the fluid back under control, and I was able to get back off of dialysis, and then that kidney was functioning normal for about 2 years, and then it finally failed, he said. The kidney didn't bounce back the second time it failed, which began about a year and a half ago. His kidney is now less than 10% functional, a very low benchmark, and he does dialysis at home 5 days a week. Kidney failure often manifests itself as a noticeable fluid buildup called edema. For many kidney disease sufferers, the fluid builds up in the lower extremities, typically the legs and feet, giving them a very puffy appearance. For me, the fluid buildup is in my face, of course, Hafe said with a laugh last Saturday afternoon as he prepared to go fishing. His dialysis treatment on that particular Saturday encountered a technical difficulty, and the treatment had to be aborted before it even began. His daughter, Cora Hafe, said they've had problems getting his dialysis to work properly, a frequent cause of distress. It's just been a real struggle, she said. On New Year's Eve, Cora managed to get her father to agree to something he'd been resisting for months, a transplant of one of her own kidneys. Waiting and hoping for a kidney to come available on the donor list can take years, and the process sometimes ends when the patient dies, awaiting a transplant. Phil's initial impression of the idea of receiving one of Cora's kidneys was not unlike other older parents who need a kidney. He was completely opposed. He said he wasn't going to take a kidney from his kid, said Cora Hafe, 37, of Sioux City. Phil's concerns were eventually tempered with optimism that even if Cora one day encounters the same problems he's having now, medical science will have advanced to the point where she won't have to worry as much about it. Even dialysis, unpleasant though it is, has come a long way in recent decades. If she needed a kidney, say in 30 years, I think the technology would be there for her. Artificial kidneys are really close to being marketed, he said. Cora Hafe says a battery of tests to evaluate her vital organs set for next week. The transplant, set to take place at Nebraska Medicine in Omaha, should be sometime in the next month or so. They'll get the transplant date set once all the tests have come back and doctors give them the green light. The transplant is by no means a risk-free venture. Any transplant recipient runs the risks of their body rejecting the organ. This is usually mitigated by immunosuppressant drugs. The immunosuppressants, in turn, can leave the recipient's immune system compromised. Cora's remaining kidney, meanwhile, will be Cora's remaining kidney, meanwhile, will more than likely suffer stress, and its functionality will probably decline to some extent after the transplant. I could end up on dialysis after the surgery, Cora said. Still, she's hoping her father and the kidney will live on for decades once the transplant is completed and he won't have to deal with dialysis any longer. Dialysis remains one of the most intensely disliked and dreaded medical interventions. My dad's pretty young, too, and we're hoping that he gets about 25 to 28 years out of mine, she said. Phil, who still works doing small handyman-type jobs, is anticipating a better life post-transplant. His dialysis leaves him homebound for 4 or 5 hours a day on the days when the treatment works as it should. I could be back to what a 63-year-old would be like, and for me, it would be pretty active. I'd probably be back to work full-time, he said. In an inset little graph, it shows Phil and Cora Hafe's benefit for life. The Hafes are holding a Benefit for Life get-together from 4:30 to 11 p.m. Saturday at a picnic shelter at Leif Erickson Park. Tavern sandwiches, sides, dessert, and drinks will be served for $11, and free will donations will be accepted to help the family defray the costs associated with the transplant. Shows an inset picture on the front page of Cora Hafe's and her father, Philip Hafe's, shown at Leif Erickson Park in Sioux City. Cora is donating one of her kidneys to her father, who was born with only one working kidney and is currently in kidney failure. The family will be holding a fundraiser at the park on Saturday. Next story on the front page, ruling limits safety-based drug testing. The court ruled employers cannot test all employees. This is by Ryan J. Foley, Dateline, Iowa City. The Iowa Supreme Court ruled Friday that employers cannot subject all warehouse employees to random drug testing by designating them as having safety-sensitive jobs. In its 4-3 ruling, The court ruled that companies must consider the specific duties of each worker when designing safety-based drug testing programs and not just where they work. The majority rejected an argument from the state's largest business association that courts should not second-guess determinations made by employers on which jobs are more dangerous than others. The decision interpreted a 1998 Iowa law that regulates how employers can conduct unannounced testing for drugs and alcohol in workplaces. One option under the law that is popular with employers is to test only those workers who are in safety-sensitive jobs in which an accident could cause death, serious injury, or damage. The case before the court involved a determination by the gas station chain Casey's General Stores that all workers at its Ankeny, Iowa distribution warehouse were safety-sensitive employees. The company implemented random drug testing for them in 2016, citing concerns about widespread drug use. Three employees who tested positive for either marijuana or amphetamines were fired, and a fourth who failed to provide an adequate urine sample was let go. All four sued the company, raising a variety of concerns about how the drug testing program was conducted. In a 4-3 decision, justices ruled that two of the employees were not in safety-sensitive jobs and therefore should not have been subject to testing under the Casey's program. Their jobs involved light-duty work, counting cigarette boxes in a secure fenced-in area known as the cage. Justices reinstated a trial court's ruling that the two employees were entitled to monetary damages for lost pay, rejecting the Casey's argument that their jobs were in a dangerous environment due to the use of heavy equipment elsewhere in the warehouse. Allowing employers to designate which workers have safety-sensitive positions without regard to job functions would allow them to unfairly target certain people for testing, an outcome the 1998 law intended to avoid, Justice Dana Oxley wrote. While we do not disagree that employers likely know best which of their positions are safety-sensitive, Casey's improperly focused on the environment in which a job is performed rather than the job functions in making that determination, she wrote. The court rejected challenges brought by the other two employees who operated forklifts and lifted heavy objects and therefore were in safety-sensitive jobs. In a dissent, Justice Matthew McDermott wrote that the majority, quote, ventures into the role of HR director for Casey's General Stores, end quote. He said there was no grounds to overturn the company's determination on who to test, saying any impaired employees in a warehouse setting pose risks to themselves and others. Quoting again, employers in Iowa might be surprised to find that they're setting themselves up for liability by being overly vigorous in designating warehouse positions as safety sensitive in their efforts to ensure a drug-free workplace, end quote, he wrote. In a companion case Friday, justices sided with a technician at a Des Moines car dealership who was fired after testing positive for methamphetamine in 2017. Under the law, companies are required to inform fired workers that they have the right to obtain a test to confirm the positive sample at their own expense. The dealership did not comply with the law because its notice failed to tell him how much a retest would cost, depriving him of the ability to make an informed decision, Oxley wrote for a unanimous court. The case was sent back to a lower court to consider an award for lost pay. It shows a picture inset on page A6, a file photo from January 14, 2020. The Iowa Supreme Court Justices Christopher McDonald, Susan Christensen, and Edward Mansfield as they are attending Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds' condition of the state address at the State House in Des Moines. Last story on the front page, deaths now 4, 159 still missing. This Dateline Surfside, Florida, with nearly 160 people accounted for and at least 4 dead after a seaside condominium tower collapsed into a smoldering heap of twisted metal and concrete. Rescuers used both heavy equipment and their own hands to comb through the wreckage on Friday in an increasing desperate search for survivors, as scores of firefighters in Surfside, just north of Miami, toiled to locate and reach anyone still alive in the remains of the 12-story Champlain Tower South. Hopes rested on how quickly crews using dogs and microphones could complete their grim yet delicate task. Quote, anytime we hear a sound, we concentrate in that area, end quote, Miami-Dade Assistant Fire Chief Raid Jadala said. It could be just steel twisting, it could be debris raining down, but not specifically sounds of tapping or sounds of a human voice. Buffeted by gusty winds and pelted by intermittent rain showers, two heavy cranes began moving debris from the pile using large claws in the morning, creating a din of crashing glass and metal as they picked up material and dumped it to the side. A smoky haze rose from the site. Once the machines paused, firefighters wearing protective masks and carrying red buckets climbed atop the pile to remove smaller pieces by hand in hope of finding spots where people might be trapped. In a parking garage, rescuers in knee-deep water used power tools to cut into the building from below. Surfside Mayor Charles Burkett said crews were doing everything possible to save as many people as they could. We do not have a resource problem. We have a luck problem, he said. The White House said President Joe Biden, who spoke with Florida Governor Ron DeSantis after the collapse, was receiving updates from the Department of Homeland Security. Officials said they still don't know exactly how many residents or visitors were in the building when it fell, but they were trying to locate 159 people who were considered unaccounted for and may or may not have been there. Flowers left in tribute decorated a fence near the tower, and people awaiting news about the search watched from a distance, hands clasped and hugging. Congregants prayed at a nearby synagogue where some members were among the missing. On the beach near the collapsed structure, visitor Fayyad Bushnak of Sterling, Virginia, knelt and scratched pray for their souls in the sand. We were supposed to be on vacation, but I have no motivation to have fun, Bushnak said. It is the perfect time to say a prayer for them. Three more bodies were removed overnight, and Miami-Dade Police Director Freddie Ramirez said authorities were working with the medical examiner's office to identify the victims. 11 injuries were reported, with 4 people treated at hospitals. Miami-Dade Mayor Daniela Levine Cava said rescuers were at extreme risk going through the rubble. Debris is falling on them as they do their work. We have structural engineers on site to ensure they will not be injured, but they are proceeding because they are so motivated and they are taking extraordinary risk on the site every day, she said. With searchers using saws and jackhammers to look for pockets large enough to hold a person, Levine Cavas said there was still reason to have hope. Rachel Spiegel described her mother, 66-year-old Judy Spiegel, who was among the missing, as a loving grandmother known for chauffeuring her 2 granddaughters everywhere, advocating for Holocaust awareness and enjoying chocolate ice cream every night. I'm just praying for a miracle, Spiegel said. We are heartbroken that she was even in the building. Shows an inset picture of Ariana Hevia of New Orleans, standing Friday with Sean Wilt near the 12-story beachfront condo building that partially collapsed a day earlier in the Surfside area of Miami. Hevia's mother, Cassandra Stetton, lives in the building. It's time now for Other Voices on the Opinion page. Today's Other Voices are from the Yankton Press and Dakotan, and it's titled Local Revenues and Drought Concerns. Yankton is sailing into the summer season on a terrific financial wave after posting another big month of revenue in May. The latest report not only topped last May, which of course was early in the COVID-19 pandemic, but even surpassed the revenue collected in May of 2019. And once again, city officials are greeting this very good news with cautious optimism, or is it optimistic caution? Citing the unknowns that are tied to the pandemic and new variants that could be headed our way. The cautionary thing is, are we through with COVID yet? Yankton Finance Officer Al Virick told the press in Dakotan. There's so much that's uncertain yet. We certainly are feeling the effect of opening up around here, but will we run into reoccurrence and start to slow down again? That's our only concern. Unfortunately, that may not be entirely accurate. The area's agricultural economy has struggled in recent years as livestock and commodity prices have fallen. Now producers are facing the expectations of a hot, dry summer, which has certainly started off that way, and the deepening of a drought that actually began a year ago. That cycle is escalating. Yankton has officially received 1.18 inches of rain in June, a month when we typically average about 4 inches of precipitation. That does not bode well for farmers, and that may have serious implications down the line for city revenue. Bear in mind, Yankton's revenue picture the past 15 months has been rather unusual given the extraordinary circumstances. Despite the pandemic, the city saw some solid revenue months in 2020, including its first ever million-dollar month last July, before slowing down in the fall. That strong run through last spring and summer indicated some solid economic opportunity amid the pandemic. This year, Yankton's revenue reports have been glowing, and not simply when compared to last year. Recovery funds and pent-up demand have the local economic engines revving just as the summer season is kicking in. That's a promising combination. But the impact of the weather on the ag economy remains a real wild card, and it is not trending well. That's why an abundance of caution, which has always been a staple of city and county budgetary thinking, is essential right now. If the farm economy is hit hard by the drought, it will impact all of us. Again, that is from the Yankton Press and Dakotan on Other Voices on the Opinion page. Moving now to page A2, Winnebago Public Health reports vaccination rate. This is by Mason Doctor, Dateline, Winnebago, Nebraska. The Winnebago Public Health Department on Friday reported that 70% of the Winnebago community age 12 and up have received at least one COVID-19 vaccine dose. The health department has held weekly community vaccination clinics each Wednesday since January at the Winnebago Public School and will continue to do so, according to a Winnebago Public Health Facebook post. The clinic, open to anyone age 12 and over, offers the two-dose Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. There are, at present, no active COVID-19 infections in Winnebago, according to Winnebago Public Health, and the department is aiming to get 80% of residents vaccinated. The pace of vaccinations in Winnebago reportedly increased after the Winnebago Tribe of Nebraska announced that, in order to attend their 155th annual Winnebago Homecoming Celebration, July 23rd to 25th, attendees must present their COVID-19 immunization card, the health department wrote in its post. Children age 11 and under can attend if accompanied by a fully vaccinated adult. According to Nebraska Department of Health and Human Services data, 31.9% of all people in the four-county district of Cedar, Dixon, Thurston, and Wayne counties are fully vaccinated. The state calculated this percentage using total population, which includes people under 12 who are too young to be vaccinated. Thus, this percentage is lower than it would be if it were calculated using only the eligible age demographic. In Dakota County, 34.3% of all residents are vaccinated, according to the DHHS. The virus has been spreading very little in Northeast Nebraska of late. The Northeast Nebraska Public Health Department this week reported 2 infections in Cedar County in the week ending June 19th and 1 in Thurston County. Dixon and Wayne counties had 0 infections that week. The Dakota County Health Department, which has not issued a weekly report since June 14th, reported 4 positive tests in the week preceding its most recent report. Another brief, beef processing plant planned in southwest Iowa, the Dateline Glenwood. A newly formed corporation announced Friday it is planning to build a beef processing plant in southwest Iowa that would bring 750 jobs to the region. Cattlemen's Heritage officials said the plant would be built along the Interstate 29 near the Mills-Pottawatomie County line, with construction scheduled to start next spring and end by late 2023, the Council Bluffs Nonpareil reported. Officials said the $325 million plant would process 1,500 head a day and have an estimated annual economic impact of $1.1 billion. The jobs will pay an average of $55,000 a year, plus benefits. Iowa Secretary of Agriculture Mike Naig said during a news conference the plant will be a welcome addition to the state's agribusiness infrastructure. Quote, there's a significant opportunity to expand meat processing capacity around the state, Naig said. This facility will create additional market access for our producers, new jobs, and economic activity in our rural communities, end quote. Ernie Goss, the Jack A. McAllister Chair in Regional Economics at Creighton University, said the project would be an, quoting, economic game changer, end quote, for mills in Pottawatomie and surrounding counties. It's time now for the obituary, starting with Mauville, Iowa. Joel C. Joe Bryan, B-R-Y-A-N. Joe Bryan, 70 years old, of Mauville, was made perfect and pain-free on Tuesday, June 22nd. A visitation was held from 5 to 7 p.m. on Friday at the Nicholas D. Jensen Funeral Home of Mauville. In lieu of flowers, memorials can be made to the Freedom Service Dogs of America. From Lamar's, LaDon Mott, M-O-T-T, LaDon Mott, 60 years old, passed away Wednesday, June 23rd. Services will be June 29th, 2 p.m. at Rex Winkle Funeral Home of Lamar's. Burial will be after the service at Memorial Cemetery in Lamar's. Visitation will be June 28th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the funeral home and resume June 29th from 1 p.m. until service time. From Sioux City, Eileen F. Silva, S-I-L-V-A, Eileen Silva of Sioux City, 75 years old, passed away Thursday, June 24th. Services will be July 1st at 10:30 a.m., Holy Cross Parish, Blessed Sacrament Church, Sioux City. Visitation June 30th from 5 to 7 p.m. From Emerson, Nebraska, our final one today, Charles J. Schulte, S-C-H-U-L-T-E. Charles Schulte, 87 years old, of Emerson, Nebraska, passed away Wednesday, June 23rd. Services will be June 28th at 10:30 a.m. at Sacred Heart Catholic Church in Emerson. Burial will be at Calvary Cemetery in Emerson. Visitation will be June 27th from 6 to 6:45 p.m. at the church. Going back to more local stories on page A2, Onawa issues water boil advisory. Onawa residents are advised to boil their water or use bottled water for cooking and other uses. The city issued a boil advisory Friday morning while the city tests its water as a precautionary measure. City Water Plant Supervisor Eric Messenbrink said, a thunderstorm Thursday morning caused an electrical short, which led to an equipment failure at the water plant. That resulted in low water pressure, which can cause bacteria to enter the water distribution system, and triggered the boil advisory until tests confirmed the city's water supply is not contaminated. The advisory will be in effect until Monday. During that time, residents should use bottled water or boil all water used for drinking, making ice, washing dishes, brushing teeth, or cooking. Water should be boiled for 1 minute, then cooled before use. Don't drink it while it's boiling, I guess. Next story, GameCon coming to Abu Bakr Shrine Temple. The 2021 Sioux City GameCon, SCGC, which is the area's convention for video and tabletop games, will be held August 20th through the 22nd at the Abu Bakr Shrine Temple at 820 Nebraska Street. Sioux City GameCon will fill two floors of the historic Shrine Temple with video game tournaments, card games, board games, Dungeons & Dragon adventures, historical medieval martial arts reenactments, and much more. SCGC will also feature a large vendor hall, charity auction, as well as local artists creating on-site game and geek culture arts. Quoting here, we are excited to be the first regional game convention to break the event dry spell of the pandemic quarantine era, said founder and event manager Bart Miller. This is a family-friendly event with a games of all kinds run by local volunteers who enjoy tabletop and video gaming. Interested attendees can visit tabletop-events/convention/sioux-city-games.com to see current event listings, attendance details, and sign-up information. Next story, Lamar's woman arrested after pursuit. A Lamar's woman was arrested following a police pursuit Wednesday night. At around 9 p.m. Wednesday, a pickup truck was reported stolen in Lamar's. A pickup truck matching the description was observed north of Highway 75 near Hinton at approximately 10:30 p.m. the same night. A Plymouth County Sheriff's deputy reported the vehicle entered the east ditch, coming to a rest on the railroad embankment near the tracks. A short foot pursuit ensued before the deputy was able to apprehend the subject. Crystal Marie Fincham, 30, was arrested for theft in the second degree for possession of the stolen vehicle. A search warrant was subsequently issued and executed on the pickup. Multiple items of interest were seized in this search. In addition to the theft charge, Fincham has been charged with driving while license was suspended, operating while under the influence, second offense, possession of a controlled substance, and possession of drug paraphernalia. Fincham was transported to the Plymouth County Jail. The Plymouth County Sheriff's Office was assisted in this investigation by the Hinton Police Department. Next story, residents advised to sign up for Alert Iowa. Woodbury County is transitioning to a new upgraded emergency notification system called Alert Iowa on June 30th. Alert Iowa is a statewide emergency notification system the county will use to communicate severe weather and emergency information via phone call, text message, email, and social media. The system has the ability to translate messages into multiple languages, according to a press release from Woodbury County Emergency Management. To sign up for Alert Iowa, residents can create an account on the Woodbury County web portal at http://woodburyalerts or download the Smart 911 app from the Apple or Google Play Store or text Woodbury IA to 67283. To opt into community-specific alerts, send a message to 67283 with your city, followed by IA, for instance, Sioux City IA or Mobile IA. Those who signed up under the outgoing emergency warning system need to sign again with the Smart 911 app before June 30th. Man sentenced for Sioux City bank robbery. A Sioux City man was sentenced Wednesday to 10 years in prison for robbing a Sioux City bank. Ronald Edwards, 35, had pleaded guilty June 15th in Woodbury County District Court to one count of second-degree robbery. He must serve at least 7 years of his sentence before he's eligible for parole. District Judge Jeffrey Polson, also ordered Edwards to pay $1,354 in restitution to Great Southern Bank. Edwards entered the bank at 329 Pierce Street on March 31st with his face covered by a bandana and demanded money from the tellers. One of the tellers handed him the money in her register. Police caught Edwards and John Boggs minutes later, a short distance away. Edwards was in possession of cash, which included bait money, which are bills with pre-recorded serial numbers that matched those taken from the bank. Police said the men were unarmed. The two had a dispute about whether Edwards would actually rob a bank, court documents said, and Edwards admitted to the robbery and a March 3rd attempted robbery of the same bank during an interview with police. Boggs has not yet been charged. Macy man sentenced to prison for assault. A Macy, Nebraska man was sentenced Friday to 9 years in federal prison for a June 2020 assault in which he broke a woman's jaw. In April, a jury in U.S. District Court in Omaha found Taylor Grant, 34, guilty of assault resulting in serious bodily injury. A police officer found the victim walking in a road in Macy. The woman was nearly unrecognizable because of facial swelling and the severity of her injuries, which included a broken jaw that required surgery. The woman reported that Grant had assaulted her the previous night and would not let her leave. Next story, 5, apply for Northwest Iowa District Judge opening. The Stateline Sioux City, 5 people have applied for an upcoming district court judicial vacancy in Iowa's 3rd Judicial District. Applying for the district judge position are Andrea Buckley, James Dane, and Billy Oyadere, all of Sioux City, Robert Tiefenthaler of Sergeant Bluff, and Christine Timmons of Lawton. The Judicial Nominating Commission for the 3B Judicial District, which includes Woodbury, Crawford, Ida, Monona, Plymouth, and Sioux counties will interview the applicants July 1st at Woodbury County Courthouse and choose 2 finalists whose names will be submitted to Governor Kim Reynolds, who will appoint one of them to replace District Judge Dwayne Hoffmeyer, who is retiring August 5th. Next story, Denison woman sentenced to prison. The former head teller at a Denison, Iowa credit union was sentenced Friday to 3 years in federal prison for an embezzling more than $1.4 million from the institution. Brenda Jensen, 53, of Denison, pleaded guilty in October in U.S. District Court in Sioux City to one count of credit union embezzlement. There's no parole in the federal system. Chief U.S. District Judge Leonard Strand ordered Jensen to serve 2 years of supervised release after completing her prison sentence. She also must pay $1.46 million in restitution. Jensen and the former manager, Janine Keim, who is her sister, were charged with embezzling $1,486,647 at Consumers Credit Union, now known as Cobalt Credit Union, from May 2012 through March 2018. According to the U.S. Attorney's Office, Jensen concealed the crime for years by overstating the change fund in the credit union's ledger balance and creating fictitious deposits into her personal accounts at the credit union. That part of the scheme led to a loss of more than $922,000. After years of embezzling, the two developed an internal kiting scheme that caused an additional $539,000 in losses and contributed to the institution becoming insolvent and being forced to merge with another credit union. Keim, 68, of Denison, pleaded guilty in May to one count of making false statements. Her sentencing date has not yet been set. All right, moving now to sports, the IGHSAU Regional Softball North and West meet in opener. Newell Fonda AW earn one seeds. This by Shane Lance. It might be hard to believe, but it's already time to start thinking about Iowa's softball postseason. Earlier this week, the Iowa Girls High School Athletic Union released its 2021 regional softball pairings. The winner of each regional tournament will advance to next month's state softball tournament at Rogers Park in Fort Dodge. Class 5A Region 1 North and West will play in the Region 1 opener on July 8th at 7 p.m., the winner will advance to the regional semifinals against number 2 ranked Fort Dodge. The winner of the semifinal matchup will play either East or Council Bluffs Jefferson in the finals for a spot at state. Class 4A in Region 1, four local teams will play in Class 4A. Region 1, Spencer will play against Webster City on July 8th at 7 p.m., while the other opener will feature Lamar's taking on Storm Lake. Winner of that game will face Sergeant Bluff Luton at 7 p.m. on July 10th, while the winner of Spencer versus Webster City will play Boone. In Region 2, this region features only one local team in Denison Schleswig. Monarchs will play on July 8th at 7 p.m. against Lewis Central, with the winner playing Harlan in the regional semifinals. The region's other opener is between Creston and Glenwood, and the winner will play a winner set on July 10th. In Class 3A Region 1, this region will feature seven Siouxland area teams competing for a spot at state, with all of the regional openers taking place on July 6th at 7 p.m. Number 12 ranked Sioux Center will play George Little Rock Central Lion in the opener, while Sheldon will host Algona. Just about 50 miles away, West Lion will be playing Spirit Lake for regional semifinal spot, while Estherville Lincoln Central will host Boyden Hole Rock Valley. In Region 2, another one with a host of local teams, all battling to get to state. Cherokee, Washington, and OABCIG will play their first round game on July 6th at 7 p.m., with the winner playing either Atlantic or Red Oak in the next round. At the same time, number 14 Bishop Heelan will host Okoboji at Briarcliff University, while MOC Floyd Valley will host Unity Christian. In Class 2A Region 1, Class 2A Region 1 has seven area teams competing for spots in Fort Dodge, with two opening games taking place on July 6th at 7 p.m. Sibley Ochedon and Emmitsburg will play in the opening round, and the winner will take on North Union in the region quarterfinals on July 7th. The winner of that game will play either West Sioux or Western Christian on July 9th in the tournament semis. In the other opener on July 6th, Pocahontas area and Alta Aurelia will face off, with Sioux Central awaiting the winner in the quarterfinals on July 7th. The winner of the quarterfinals game will play either South O'Brien or Ridgeview in the semis. Region 2, in their opener, MVA-OCOU will play Lawton Bronson on July 6th at 7 p.m., with the winner playing at number 12 West Monona the next evening. West Monona High School will be the site of the semifinals round, too, with the quarterfinals victor playing either Hinton or East Sac County. In Class 1A, Region 1, 11 Siouxland teams will play in this tournament. In the opening round, Hartley, Melvin Sanborn, and Harris Lake Park will play on July 6th, with the winner taking on number 6th ranked Akron Westfield on July 7th. 54 miles away from that game, Galen Catholic will host Trinity Christian and Lamar's for the right to face either GTRA or MMCRU in the quarterfinals. At Kingsley Pearson High School, the Panthers will play Whiting, with the winner set to face number 15 Remsen St. Mary's on July 7th. River Valley will also host a regional quarterfinal on July 7th against the winner of the opening game between Westwood and Woodbury Central. Top-ranked Newell Fonda, which currently has a 25-4 record, is a favorite in this regional. In Region 2, the Mustangs will host a regional quarterfinal against Bishop Garrigan or Glidden Ralston on July 7th as the team attempts to get back to the state tournament for the fourth consecutive season. Show some inset pictures. Page C4 shows Lamar's Peyton Wright bunting the ball during Sioux City West versus Lamar softball action on June 3rd in Sioux City. It also shows Akron Westfield sophomore Natalie Nielsen fielding a ground ball and turning to throw to first base during last year's state softball tournament. Going back to more local stories on page A2, Onawa issues water boil advisory. Onawa residents are advised to boil their water or use bottled water for cooking and other uses. The city issued a boil advisory Friday morning while the city tests its water as a precautionary measure. City Water Plant Supervisor Eric Messenbrink said a thunderstorm Thursday morning caused an electrical short, which led to an equipment failure at the water plant. That resulted in low water pressure, which can cause bacteria to enter the water distribution system, and triggered the boil advisory until tests confirmed the city's water supply is not contaminated. The advisory will be in effect until Monday. During that time, residents should use bottled water or boil all water used for drinking, making ice, washing dishes, brushing teeth, or cooking. Water should be boiled for 1 minute, then cooled before use. Don't drink it while it's boiling, I guess. Next story, GameCon coming to Abu Bakr Shrine Temple. The 2021 Sioux City Game Con, SCGC, which is the area's convention for video and tabletop games, will be held August 20th through the 22nd at the Abu Bakr Shrine Temple at 820 Nebraska Street. Sioux City Game Con will fill two floors of the historic Shrine Temple with video game tournaments, card games, board games, Dungeons & Dragon adventures, historical medieval martial arts reenactments, and much more. SCGC will also feature a large vendor hall, charity auction, as well as local artists creating on-site game and geek culture arts. Quoting here, we are excited to be the first regional game convention to break the event dry spell of the pandemic quarantine era, said founder and event manager Bart Miller. This is a family-friendly event with games of all kinds run by local volunteers who enjoy tabletop and video gaming. Interested attendees can visit tabletop-events/convention/sioux-city-games.com to see current event listings, attendance details, and sign-up information. Next story, Lamar's woman arrested after pursuit. A Lamar's woman was arrested following a police pursuit Wednesday night. At around 9 p.m. Wednesday, a pickup truck was reported stolen in Lamar's. A pickup truck matching the description was observed north of Highway 75 near Hinton at approximately 10:30 p.m. the same night. A Plymouth County Sheriff's deputy reported the vehicle entered the east ditch, coming to a rest on the railroad embankment near the tracks. A short foot pursuit ensued before the deputy was able to apprehend the subject. Crystal Marie Fincham, 30, was arrested for theft in the second degree. For possession of the stolen vehicle, a search warrant was subsequently issued and executed on the pickup. Multiple items of interest were seized in this search. In addition to the theft charge, Fincham has been charged with driving while license was suspended, operating while under the influence, second offense, possession of a controlled substance, and possession of drug paraphernalia. Fincham was transported to the Plymouth County Jail. The Plymouth County Sheriff's Office was assisted in this investigation by the Hinton Police Department. Next story, residents advised to sign up for Alert Iowa. Woodbury County is transitioning to a new upgraded emergency notification system called Alert Iowa on June 30th. Alert Iowa is a statewide emergency notification system the county will use to communicate severe weather and emergency information via phone call, text message, email, and social media. The system has the ability to translate messages into multiple languages, according to a press release from Woodbury County Emergency Management. To sign up for Alert Iowa, residents can create an account on the Woodbury County web portal at http://bit.ly/woodburyalerts or download the Smart 911 app from the Apple or Google Play Store, or text Woodbury IA to 67283 to opt into community-specific alerts. Send a message to 67283 with your city, followed by IA, for instance, Sioux City IA or Mobile IA. Those who signed up under the outgoing emergency warning system need to sign again with the Smart 911 app before June 30th. Man sentenced for Sioux City bank robbery. A Sioux City man was sentenced Wednesday to 10 years in prison for robbing a Sioux City bank. Ronald Edwards, 35, had pleaded guilty June 15th in Woodbury County District Court to one count of second-degree robbery. He must serve at least 7 years of his sentence before he's eligible for parole. District Judge Jeffrey Polson, also ordered Edwards to pay $1,354 in restitution to Great Southern Bank. Edwards entered the bank at 329 Pierce Street on March 31st with his face covered by a bandana and demanded money from the tellers. One of the tellers handed him the money in her register. Police caught Edwards and John Boggs minutes later, a short distance away. Edwards was in possession of cash, which included bait money, which are bills with pre-recorded serial numbers that matched those taken from the bank. Police said the men were unarmed. The two had a dispute about whether Edwards would actually rob a bank, court documents said, and Edwards admitted to the robbery and a March 3rd attempted robbery of the same bank during an interview with police. Boggs has not yet been charged. Macy man sentenced to prison for assault. A Macy, Nebraska man was sentenced Friday to 9 years in federal prison for a June 2020 assault in which he broke a woman's jaw. In April, a jury in U.S. District Court in Omaha found Taylor Grant, 34, guilty of assault resulting in serious bodily injury. A police officer found the victim walking in a road in Macy. The woman was nearly unrecognizable because of facial swelling and the severity of her injuries, which included a broken jaw that required surgery. The woman reported that Grant had assaulted her the previous night and would not let her leave. Next story, 5, apply for Northwest Iowa District Judge opening. The Stateline Sioux City, 5 people have applied for an upcoming district court judicial vacancy in Iowa's 3rd Judicial District. Applying for the district judge position are Andrea Buckley, James Dane, and Billy Oyader, all of Sioux City, Robert Tiefenthaler of Sergeant Bluff, and Christine Timmons of Lawton. The Judicial Nominating Commission for the 3B Judicial District, which includes Woodbury, Crawford, Ida, Monona, Plymouth, and Sioux counties, will interview the applicants July 1st at Woodbury County Courthouse and choose 2 finalists whose names will be submitted to Governor Kim Reynolds, who will appoint one of them to replace District Judge Dwayne Hoffmeyer, who is retiring August 5th. Next story, Denison woman sentenced to prison. The former head teller at a Denison, Iowa credit union was sentenced Friday to 3 years in federal prison for an embezzling more than $1.4 million from the institution. Brenda Jensen, 53, of Denison, pleaded guilty on October in U.S. District Court in Sioux City to one count of credit union embezzlement. There's no parole in the federal system. Chief U.S. District Judge Leonard Strand ordered Jensen to serve 2 years of supervised release after completing her prison sentence. She also must pay $1.46 million in restitution. Jensen and the former manager, Janine Keim, who is her sister, were charged with embezzling $1,486,647 at Consumers Credit Union, now known as Cobalt Credit Union, from May 2012 through March 2018. According to the U.S. Attorney's Office, Jensen concealed the crime for years by overstating the change fund in the credit union's ledger balance and creating fictitious deposits into her personal accounts at the credit union. That part of the scheme led to a loss of more than $922,000. After years of embezzling, the two developed an internal kiting scheme that caused an additional $539,000 in losses and contributed to the institution becoming insolvent and being forced to merge with another credit union. Keim, 68, of Denison, pleaded guilty in May to one count of making false statements. Her sentencing date has not yet been set. All right, moving now to sports, the IGHSAU Regional Softball North and West meet in opener. New Old Fonda AW earn one seeds. This dayline, this by Shane Lance. It might be hard to believe, but it's already time to start thinking about Iowa's softball postseason. Earlier this week, the Iowa Girls High School Athletic Union released its 2021 regional softball pairings. The winner of each regional tournament will advance to next month's state softball tournament at Rogers Park in Fort Dodge. Class 5A Region 1 North and West will play in the Region 1 opener on July 8th at 7 p.m. The winner will advance to the regional semifinals against number 2 ranked Fort Dodge. The winner of the semifinal matchup will play either East or Council Bluffs Jefferson in the finals for a spot at state. Class 4A in Region 1, four local teams will play in Class 4A Region 1. Spencer will play against Webster City on July 8th at 7 p.m., while the other opener will feature Lamar's taking on Storm Lake. Winner of that game will face Sergeant Bluff Luton at 7 p.m. on July 10th, while the winner of Spencer versus Webster City will play Boone. In Region 2, this region features only one local team in Denison Schleswig. Monarchs will play on July 8th at 7 p.m. against Lewis Central, with the winner playing Harlan in the regional semifinals. The region's other opener is between Creston and Glenwood, and the winner will play a winner set on July 10th. In Class 3A Region 1, this region will feature seven Siouxland area teams competing for a spot at state, with all of the regional openers taking place on July 6th at 7 p.m. Number 12 ranked Sioux Center will play George Little Rock Central Lion in the opener, while Sheldon will host Algona. Just about 50 miles away, West Lion will be playing Spirit Lake for regional semifinal spot, while Estherville Lincoln Central will host Boyden Hole Rock Valley. In Region 2, another one with a host of local teams, all battling to get to state. Cherokee Washington and OABCIG will play their first round game on July 6th at 7 p.m., with the winner playing either Atlantic or Red Oak in the next round. At the same time, number 14 Bishop Heelan will host Okoboji at Briarcliff University, while MOC Floyd Valley will host Unity Christian. In Class 2A Region 1, has seven area teams competing for spots in Fort Dodge, with two opening games taking place on July 6th at 7 p.m. Sibley Ocheyedan and Emmitsburg will play in the opening round, and the winner will take on North Union in the region quarterfinals on July 7th. The winner of that game will play either West Sioux or Western Christian on July 9th in the tournament semis. In the other opener on July 6th, Pocahontas area and Alta Aurelia will face off, with Sioux Central awaiting the winner in the quarterfinals on July 7th. We thank you for listening to IRIS, your radio reading service.